Hello and welcome to the Weird Things Podcast. I'm Andrew Mean, joined by Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Oh, heck yes. I've never been happier, Andrew, that I have nothing to do with politics and I have no reason to be in Washington, D.C., even though I'm slightly sad that I'll be missing the We're Not Wrong live performance there. I'm mainly happy to not be there.
Well, Brian, I know. I can't imagine what it'd be like to have to be in the swamp, particularly this time of year, dealing with all of that. So, lucky us.
Okay. That sounded just coy enough that that I wonder about all of your efforts and your ambassadorship for AI.
Oh, yeah. I was actually a year ago this time. I was in D.C., maybe at the White House.
I was going to say, what color was the house you were at?
It was white. What was I doing there? Sorry, I can't talk about it. Talking about AI? Well, yeah. So let's jump right into it. Speaking of my former company, I don't know if you heard of this company, Brian. I don't know if you mentioned that I'd worked for a tiny little startup in California that's made it into the news of recent, OpenAI.
Yeah. So now that you are divested from the internal workings, I assume you got some kind of stock options or something. So it's like you are cheering for them. But what a weird beef between Scarlett Johansson and OpenAI.
So I will be happy to provide my perspective of it. And also I got it there. When you leave any company, you know, there's like, you know, hey, you can't talk about that or, you know, company secrets and stuff, which is completely understandable. And I've worked in LA and I've seen like really weird contracts and stuff. So and nothing I saw looked weird or whatever to me, but that caused a bit of controversy because, the news was like, people at OpenAI are afraid to speak. Let me tell you what, if I thought they were doing something wrong, nothing would keep me from this microphone. As you know, I've been very lucky in books and other stuff, and running my mouth has turned out really well for me throughout my life. So
I guess to bring people who haven't heard about it, like a bunch of tech blogs are acting as though they'd never encountered a contract that said, by the way, you're not going to SHIT on our product in the future, or you will not get the benefits that you are signing up for, which is super duper standard when it comes to artistic projects. Well, but
I'd say, you and I've seen this in artistic things. It may be different in tech, and I want to be fairly honest that because I'd never worked for a tech company, whatever. And I just like, oh yeah, I've seen this stuff before in entertainment. And so that crazed, because also you had a number of people who've been leaving OpenAI, partially because you've had people who've been there for several years, and you know, that you're at a tech company for several years and it increases in value, you make a lot of money, and then you start to think about what you want to do next. And so I think people have been reading more into that, but there was the idea, are they afraid to speak, whatever. And I've said this on Twitter, like, if I ever thought there was anything unethical they weren't addressing, whatever, I wouldn't hesitate. Like, I have my books, I have other stuff. I had the producers of a major HBO TV series come to me going, do you want to help us do something about the insides of this company? And I'm like, it is Big Bang Theory. It is not Game of Thrones, and you will be disappointed by the level of drama that does not exist there. So anyhow, but a big thing came out. So we talked about this GPT-4o, right? Which is this model, which we discussed. What made it amazing was, instead of three different AIs, one that recognizes voice and puts out text, another one that understands text and puts out text, another one takes text and turns it into speech, it's one model. One consistent model that you speak to, and it can understand, like, can see kind of the voice patterns, and then it can generate voice, and it can do this in a way where it can say, I am going to talk like a robot, or I'm going to speak slowly, or I'm going to be sarcastic. So we talked about that before. I was involved a little bit in the development of that, you know, some of the early stages of that, offered some input because I've worked in audiobooks, all this. And I'll give you a little bit of background, like, you know, when we first talked about bringing in voiceover artists to record voices to use for this, I'd made the point, hey, whoever we hire, we got to give them complete disclosures so they understand how this will be used. There's no surprises. And we got to pay them way above standard, whatever we're doing. And OpenAI was like, yes, we will do that. And they did that. There was no pushback. There was nothing about anything like that. So anyhow, when we wanted to create voices, we created a number of voices. And so we had, when we launched back in September, we had Co, we had Sky, we had all these different voices. We hired different actors to portray them. We actually brought in some Hollywood people who, people whose names you'd recognize to help with like direction and stuff to work on this. Now, simultaneously, you know, we thought about getting celebrity voices, like names came up. Like I like wanted Jeff Goldblum, whatever. And then one of the people that thought about getting was Scarlett Johansson. So Scarlett Johansson was.
I remember specifically the very first time I saw any of the demos, I was worried about the overly intimate way the default, you know, first iteration felt. And it was awkward in front of my kids. And I was like, man, I would pay money to have Jack Black, like, because ain't nobody going to be confused about whether or not I'm sexually attracted to my phone when it's Jack Black talking to me, so, you know.
So they cast voices. They had real people trying to do that. And there was never any intent to mimic or copy Scarlett Johansson's voice. So somebody here is saying, you know, there's no never, ever. And I will, anybody who wants to challenge me on this, I good luck. And then we just had the Washington Post article because OpenAI said, here, look at all of our communications. Talk to the agent for the woman that was hired. Never anything we mentioned about trying to copy this. So what happened is people's first introduction to a emotive, personable AI was in the movie Her, Scarlett Johansson. And that's an example of what in AI people go, hey, that's what you want, is something that can feel personable, can emote, can show you real emotion. And for people who've, I don't know, not spent time in LA and listened to the average 30-year-old LA actress with vocal fry, it was confusing to them. And I've heard people go, it's Scarlett. I'm like, no, that's, I bet Scarlett Johansson. It's nothing like her to me. And other people go, it does. So I can't tell people that they're wrong. And so point is they've reached out multiple times. Like, yeah, hey, we, you know, they went to her, hey, could we get your voice too? Could we get your voice too? And then other people go, oh, wait, it's that. Well, no, that's not. It's completely an actress, completely different voice. And that woman, she had never been considered this, you know, never been, you know, she said her own words, like, I've never had anybody said that I sound like her. I've never had this. So again, you know, we have a chat room here and people can say, oh no, it's this. Cool. I was there. You weren't. You can call me a liar, which is fine. That's your prerogative. But I was there. And I can tell you that's what the research, that's what the, everything was shared to the Washington Post. All this has showed. Never any intention to that. There are people who thought it was Rashida Jones, by the way, when they heard the voice, whatever. So I can't convince you out of the cartoon in your head, but I can show you the receipts. And we've done that. So,
yeah. Well, the, because I'm a goofball magician on the other side of the world, it makes me think of like, you know, originally the Aflac duck was Gilbert Gottfried, but then for reasons totally unrelated to any ducks and or Aflac, they decided to drop him and they figured out that anybody can just screech the words Aflac like that.
Yeah.
Did Gilbert Gottfried suddenly say, no, I mastered that art of having that voice?
Yeah. And it's again, like, you know, where the commentary in the chat room is that I have an interest in this, but I also have the facts that have we've been put out there and been demonstrated for people from the statements from the actress, statements from the lawyer. Yes, we've tried to get celebrities. One of the ones we wanted to get was Scarlett Johansson to do her voice. It would have been that voice plus the existing ones, including Sky. It was not a replacement. It was never that. OpenAI has had the technology for 2 years to do precise, completely accurate voice simulation. And had they done it? The thing that I said pointed out too is the idea of the movie Her, which was the AI. If it was about Scarlett Johansson's voice, then we would have just tweeted out Black Widow, you know? And it's like, well, like, no, that's the point. It's the idea of this personal AI campaign that understands you. Some people confused by this. They don't want to let go of this. There's some sinister plot. Want to accuse me of, you know, lying. It's fine. You can do that. But well, and,
boy, people really do love their narratives to be simple. You know, we want to believe thing good, thing bad, thing evil or whatever. Person motivated by whatever.
Hold up. Let me just this. They just started to go terrible. So they go, so your defense, it's not selling. No, it was nothing was stolen. Nothing was stolen. We hired an actress, several actresses to do voices. That's it. That was never trying to mimic anybody. Nobody. You're making a claim there. And that's what people still say. Like, no, like there was never an intent to have that voice be a mimicry there. Some people thought it sounded similar. And again, that voice, Sky, had been out there since September. It's been out there for over 6 months and nobody said anything. But was the moment they turned on GPT-4o and did a demo and showed how emotional it could be, they go, oh, wait, that reminds me of her. And it's like, okay, so this voice has been here 6 months and nobody had an issue. So what is it? And it's like, again, it's we have very few examples in, you know, in science fiction of personality. You know, if you have all the robots talk like the Star Trek computer, how first time we get something emotional, people make a connection and they don't want to let go of it. So sorry, Brian. It's been a bit of an issue for the last week.
And that's part of why I'm giving you the runway to clear your throat on it, because it's very, very hard when you know the thing and you see a cartoon of it represented out in the public media. You know, talk to a vocal coach. You're going to find out that there are, I don't know, let me guess, 6-7 archetypes of voices. And one of them will be the, you know, later 40s, breathy vocal fry female or whatever.
I have a friend, by the way, who I pushed to say we should use. And if they had used her, it would have been even worse, because I would see how some people listen to her and she's got a very distinct voice. We would think that we were really trying to emulate Scarlett Johansson. She does a voice of a popular franchise character. And it's the thing, like, and she's not hired to be that, but there is a California girl vocal fry kind of thing that you hear that. As far as should the actress come forward, here's the problem that they're in. Like, one, their agent came forward. They went Washington Post, you know, OpenAI. Granted, Washington Post the day before had a headline exactly how stupid was what OpenAI did to Scarlett Johansson. One, they didn't do anything to Scarlett Johansson. So the next day, they do the headline, OpenAI didn't copy Scarlett Johansson's voice for ChatGPT record show. So OpenAI went and said, okay, we're going to have to talk to the agent, talk to, you know, represent the actress, talk to everybody involved, because we just, if they were trying to pull something over, that would have been a very dangerous thing to do, because there would have been the risk of an email or something coming up. And there wasn't, because again, like I said, I was there. There was never, if I thought they were trying, as a person who is a writer, who is also particularly, you know, nervous about, you know, AI and the creative industry and whatnot and the impact of this, I would have, you know, screamed. And Brian knows me. Brian, you know.
There are times that to the detriment of this very podcast, when as I lovingly think of Andrew interior mode, it's just like, oh, he's not going to let go, is he?
No.
Like when he feels like it's clearly this way.
wrong. Well, we had Justin.
That used to be a problem for the show, but now that I understand, it's part of Andrew OS. The truth is very important to you.
When we ran iTrix, there was a very famous celebrity who we would cover, and we were extremely fair with this person. And at one point, we republished something in somebody else's commentary. They threatened to sue us. And at that time, Justin and I didn't have any money. We're broke, and we're getting all this threats of litigation and all this sort of thing.
If I'm remembering correctly, all you guys did was embed a YouTube video. So you didn't publish it. You used the embed code where it was hosted by Google, produced by somebody else. Like, you are so far removed. And yet this person, if we're thinking of the same story.
Yeah. And Justin and I, we talked about it. And I'm like, I'm going to live out of my goddamn car before I back down on this. Like, money is nice. Integrity is awesome. And so that's, you know, I work for James Randi, and we'd go after Uri Geller. I had my name named in lawsuits, you know, because I work with him and for calling Uri Geller a fraud.
That is,
you know,
and saying he's a, real quick, take a moment to just sink in that victory. Your name has been named both in lawsuits and in academic papers.
Yeah. Yes. So I don't, it's for somebody to say, hey, trust my integrity. That's not really a good reason for you to go. But I would say historically, I've always been, I will rather stick by what I think is right, even to the detriment, because I'm stubborn. And I think we all have that in common here, Brian.
Well, just to put a pin in the Scarlett Johansson thing, it sounds to me like you, with what knowledge you have from having had a front row seat during that time, feel like there's no there. Maybe we can take a moment and speak to why so many people want to seize upon it. And granted, like, this is, I mean, you and I had talked about, like, hey, I sure hope nobody decides that they're trying to on purpose do her.
Say it again.
Oh, if you've seen the movie Her, it's not a very flattering representation of the user. why would they want to do that?
No, I mean, I would, again, we could spend hours dissecting the movie Her, and it's a meta commentary response in a way to Lost in Translation, because, you know, Spike Jones did Her and
Scarlett Johansson was
in, yeah, Sofia Coppola did, yes, Lost in Translation, right?
Which featured Scarlett Johansson, and yeah, there's a scene where Sofia Coppola, who dated Spike Jones, kind of has a stand-in for the Spike Jones character, who is, shall we say, unflatteringly represented in that movie.
Yeah, and they were actually married, I believe. It's a comment, and I would say that you can look at it like kind of different points of view on that. But the message to her, as I've watched this movie multiple times, is it's an AI. The idea of AI is it's something there at a point you need, and then you grow out of, right? We meet Joaquin Phoenix's character. He's very vulnerable. He can't give up on his ex-wife or doesn't want to sign the papers. Spoiler alert. And then he gets this AI companion that makes him feel better and all this, but then she grows out of him, and then he has to sort of learn to move on. Now, some people go, it's dystopian. It's just like, no, it's like Lost, like in Translation. She meets Bill Murray at this point in time when she's confused by life and whatever, and it's fun and whatnot, and says something to her. Nothing becomes of that, but it does become sort of this idea of she looks at things differently. And I'd say that, you know, the Her to me isn't about this. Obviously, he's devastated with that, you know, the super AI, but it's like you kind of like, yeah, it's like it's probably what it felt like to date Sofia Coppola. You know, she's this incredible person, and she becomes a superstar Nova and just moves on to the next level. And so we could get into that. But I think the idea that was powerful was it was an example of an AI that understood us, was there for us. It was felt personal until he finds out that she's having conversations with 20 million other people. But that idea that we would all be benefited by have somebody there to listen to us. We would all be better off by doing that, and a lot of us don't.
So the holy moly, somebody in our chat, 9 of 12, says my friend Owen wrote the Her soundtrack. That's extraordinary.
That's awesome.
I wonder if the psychological features that are explored in the movie are about to become real, because, like, for example, this is kind of a gross example, but Dan Harmon publicly admitted to buying a real doll, a very physically accurate simulacrum of a silicone woman, because he was just like, you know what, I'm done with actual relationships. I just want to satisfy my carnal desires and so on. And then he has since landed in what appears to be a healthy relationship. And his partner, who is a writer in Hollywood, she wrote a, unfortunately on Quibi, series about what it's like to to date a man who at one point had a sexual relationship with a real doll. I wonder if we're going to go through a bit of a phase of that with AI writ large, because AI will tell us what we want to hear in, you know, possibly the safest or one of the safer ways. Although I'm still skeptical. There are things I still won't tell OpenAI because I just.
All right, Brian, why won't you?
I'm waiting to hear whether or not they ever have a data breach or something. And yeah.
So it's a very fascinating world that we're heading into. And I would say that, you know, conversing or getting attached to an AI, a healthy relationship, unhealthy relationship, it's going to be variable. Also, there is an entire spectrum of in human relationships, healthy human relationships and bad human relationships. And I think that AI is going to follow that. There are certain AI chatbots right now that function merely for, like, you know, being pretend girlfriends, which maybe helps some guys And I could see maybe some of them might be useful, but some of them might reinforce bad ideas of treating women as objects, whatever. And so each one of these things has to be judged by its own. In the chat, they pointed out, I won't listen to AI because it tells me to put glue on my pizza. In defense for the Google answers, and it said non-toxic glue. It said non-toxic glue, okay?
Wait, so, I'm unfamiliar with this story. Fill me in on this one.
So Google added a feature, which is basically you can ask a question, they'll have an AI model generate an answer for you, like basically take the data. And it's been giving some very wacky responses, like in a case of like, how can I get cheese to stick to pizza? And it suggests like using non-toxic glue. And then should I use gasoline and spaghetti? And it says, well, no, but if you want a really spicy spaghetti sauce. And I'm like, maybe it's right. We have to test these things.
What's funny is if the AI, this is how you know the AI doesn't truly have agency, because if it was a person and it had an ego to bruise, similar to Captain Spock, where he's like, you misunderstand me, Captain. I have no ego to bruise. If it had an ego to bruise, it might follow that up with like, come on, that was a good joke. Like, are we not telling jokes now? Is that off the table?
I saw a funny, somebody put a screenshot. I don't know. I want to believe it's real, even though it was ChatGPT, where somebody says, hey, I'm having this problem, this code, it's not working. And the ChatGPT response was, it works on my machine. It's like,
which like AGI. Again, knowing that the large language model is built from things humans say, that is something a human would say.
So as these models become more sophisticated, something happens. There's one thing to have a bunch of text in there and say, I said a thing and it founds the most similar thing to it, right? As they become smarter, smarter happens from a process called generalize, right? Where I can give it some information here and some related but completely different information here that's totally spaced apart. And it might say, eggs are generally white and they have yolks on the inside. And over there, it can be like, an egg is a really, you know, really good aerodynamic designs, never mention egg, but show the shape of an egg. And a really smart AI will be like, while it's training, go, that's a very similar shape. And if somebody asked me to define a really good aerodynamic design, I might say egg-shaped, because those two, that's called a generalization. That information was never programmed in there to say eggs are good aerodynamically, right? Right. And it can learn a lot of these things. And you sometimes get dumb generalizations where it'll say, you know, gasoline. Flammable's like spicy, sounds good. And we saw this from GPT-1, which was stupid, to GPT-2, which was sometimes smart, but mostly stupid, to GPT-3, which was kind of smart, but also made a lot of mistakes, and then to GPT-4, which got even smarter, and now GPT-4.0. We see it get better, hallucinate less. We see these generalizations become much, much smarter. So when you get to a GPT-5 level, or whatever it's going to be called, these things also have to assume what you mean, which we forget, because like you'll ask it a question. I've shown like some of these classic examples that give AI are way more ambiguous than we think they are. And it has to understand what it thinks you mean. If you misspell something, should it stop and correct you, or should it just give you the answer? If there's missing a comma, I encountered a thing with GPT-3 where it was parsing legal documents correctly 80% of the time. Why not the other 20%? Well, the documents they wanted to test with were missing a comma and a clause. And legally, there have been court decisions that have gone completely the other way based upon the placement of a comma.
To this very day, the very bizarre phrasing of the Second Amendment with so many comma clauses, like, a local militia being important to local states, comma, therefore something, comma, the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. It's like, does that mean that every state should have arms for the militia? Does it mean every person is free to, you know, be a gunslinger?
And we have to interpret what we understood at the time for that to mean. And so we can find examples of where humans haven't even agreed on this. And then we're like, well, AI should tell me. Well, you might like the answer, but that person might. So these get hard. But when we talk about where these things are going to be used, and there was a study, and I have a problem with the way the study was done, where they went and they had people like randomly assigned to AI or randomly assigned to human counselors, and they rated the AI counselors better than the humans, but they didn't tell them they were speaking to AI. And then they told people, how would you rate it now that you know that it was AI? And like, oh, it's horrible. And he's like, oh, people hate AI counselors. No, people hate being lied to. That was the realization, but it was, people wanted to dunk AI. I think that the data shows there's a new study came out comparing, you know, for diagnosis and explaining things to patients, they compared GPT-4 to doctors. Guess who scored much higher?
Let me guess. The one that's trained on language and verbal skills versus the one that's trained on mechanical knowledge of the biological instrument known as the human body.
Yeah, and the one that can mimic empathy really, really well. And so GPT-4 was outperforming physicians in bedside manner and these other criteria. And again, there are going to be doctors that will be much better, but on average, and guess what? We all go to the average doctor. I'm excited by the ability for, I've consulted for a few, you know, companies working in the mental health space. And, you know, we talk about how do you use this in responsible ways? Not everybody can afford a therapist. And even if you can, you don't know if they're good, i.e. BetterHelp, you know, .com. Look up all the controversy over that. And it's hard because it's like, even doctors were bad at telling if they're good or not because, hey, how long should this take to heal? I don't know, 3 weeks, 5 weeks later. Oh, you've got a problem. You know, mental health is worse because you're going to somebody with your problems and you're giving this to them and you become dependent upon this person. And if it's not working out, you may put that upon yourself and not their skills or their abilities. So I'm excited by the idea of one, really good mental health experts to use this technology to self-check and to make sure they're providing their patients really good help. And eventually, for some cases, just go talk to a bot.
Along those lines, I really enjoy the ongoing game of discovering yet another use for whatever LLM you're using. What my wife uses it most for is she writes a letter as angry as she feels and then says, could you help me edit this so I don't come across as hostile? And then she's able to say the same things, bring up all the same points, explain why this sinkhole in our street is a danger to our community that will reduce our property values. And last week, a teenager tripped over or whatever. But she doesn't have to self-filter before she starts typing. She gets to say the mean one, like, y'all's a bunch of bags of S words. This MF and whatever, blah, 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 blah. And then it's like, please make this civil. And then it does. And I think it's very, very good at that when it comes to like the bedside manner of things.
Yeah, I think that as we observe these things, yeah, we can become better at it. And because sometimes there's, I don't know about this, Brian, but sometimes you live with somebody, you love them, and there are things you're afraid to say to them. Because it'll just create more controversy.
I'm unfamiliar with the scenario.
And probably it works the other way too.
This is a functional thing. Just two or three days ago, I was at a meeting where I'm on the board of directors for a place. And the issue that came up,
because every time he says the place, I go, I can't believe this is a real place.
I know. I'm glad you understand why I don't even say what the place is. But one of the items on the agenda was that the insurance company was changing the rules. They had previously said, just give us a net value of all your assets and then we'll base it on that. You know, basically one big bucket. How much is everything worth? How much do you want to be insured for? They changed the rules and said, no. Now we need line items on what every single thing of value on your property is. And the chancellor, I asked, I was like, how long do you expect this to take? And it's a big campus. It's a big, big campus. And I don't think he was flippant or inappropriate or inaccurate when he said, probably 4 weeks of some person's full-time efforts to jot down all of these assets all over the place. And then I said, please join me at your refrigerator. And we walked over to the refrigerator and I was like, yo, we're taking inventory. I'm going to open up a refrigerator. You're going to tell me what's in it. And then I did it. And sure enough, it said, looks like you have 37 cans of cola, two things of milk, whatever. And I said, great, give me values for all of those. And it was funny because I said, give me values. But I didn't specify what kind of values. So it just responded with 12 ounces here, 3 pints there, this one, that one, the other one. I was like, monetary values. And he's like, like about $12, about this. And I'm like, dude, please, $20 a month. Just walk around one day, take pictures of everything and just have it describe everything, scoop it all into a big document, because at that point you're going to send it to the freaking insurance company. And guess what? It's not like a human's going to go over it. They're going to have their AI look over it and say, well, it seems to me like the total value of all the property on this property is blankety blankety blank.
It's great. I would say, I'll do a plug right now for Google Gemini, which we were just dunking on a moment ago. They have built in, if you go to AI Studio, which actually a friend of mine, former OpenAI personnel working at Google, is the ambassador for, or the representative for, is AI Studio, which is their interface. So what they could do is they could walk around a video, just do video, Brian, of the thing, of the campus, and just take that video and upload it. And it would be very curious to see if they could do it, but you can upload a whole video of it and say, hey, can you itemize all the items here? Oh, I think that might work.
You know what? I actually, we've done a couple of like YouTube video tours of the property here. I would be interested to see if it could just interpret from that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be, and it's going to be ChatGPT is coming with the full, with the video capability where you just leave it on and run around and that'll do it. But I'm saying, if you're looking for something right now, you could upload a video to probably to Gemini.
Wow. Wow. And I know that, Google, Alphabet Corporation, Google is pretty judicious about like when it interrupts your day to give you an ad. It's trying really hard to get me to play with Gemini. It says first 2 months free and then $20 after that. I didn't really consider trying it out, but I know you're in the biz, so I'm guessing you're already playing with all those.
Yeah, I play as much as I can. I have subscriptions to all the different accounts, all the different services, and play at them and just understand what, you know, what's good for what. I know I'm an OpenAI shill, but right here, I'm telling you, if you want to do like a video analysis, Gemini is, you know, has built in a tool. And so if you go to AI Studio.
Yeah. Well, now I just want to stop everything and go mess around with that.
Yeah.
Hey, we got a little bit of space news. I don't know if you talked about it last week. Blue Origin did another fantastic suborbital flight. And just like they did when they sent up William Shatner, a.k.a. James Tiberius Kirk, this time they were able to, I think this is a PR win, whether or not it's jaded for me to look at it this way or not, I apologize. But a African-American pilot was passed over for the space program, and he got
Ed Dwight.
What's that?
Ed Dwight.
It seems like everything went off without a hitch, and that's probably, I mean, for a company that currently is positioned mostly as a space roller coaster company, I think that's I think they're doing a good job of getting strong PR hits by making dreams come true and talking less about the functionality of ascending to the stars forever.
Yeah, I think it's great. Yeah, and there had been allegations early on in the NASA selection program that a very famous, well-respected test pilot who had been involved may have been a bit of a racist and vetoed that.
Which,
and eventually,
which to be fair, would have been of its time. Not that that would excuse it in any way.
Yeah, and it wasn't quite create the controversy. Perhaps it didn't. It shouldn't happen. So yeah, the first Black American didn't go into space until 1983. And so I it would not surprise me to find out that happened, and that is absolutely sad and tragic. That particularly somebody who's dedicated themselves to the country from which you know they decided to serve, worked hard, put their life on the line multiple times, whatever, to have somebody somewhere and say, nope, you're not good enough. That's absolutely tragic. Absolutely, absolutely. It, you know, is a frustrating thing. And I would love for, I don't know, more stories about that than like Apple TV glorifying a drug dealer, pimp, violent criminal, you know, in a happy-go-lucky series, you know, doing a complete spin on his attempt to flee to Cuba because he was being accused of murdering a teenage girl and having all the witnesses killed off. Talk about the Huey P. Newton story. And it's like if you want to look for examples of Black excellence, I can give you a list. And we can start with people like Ed Dwight. We can start with these amazing people who clearly were not murdering people and making their community worse.
What is the Huey P. Newton story? I don't know that one.
Oh, it's Apple TV.
I do feel like I got most of it out of the description, though.
So, I mean, there's the Big Cigar is what they call it. It's like a 3-episode show or whatever. And he was one of the co-founders of the Black Panthers, which is a very complex organization that ranged from doing food kitchens and community programs to selling heroin and actually impoverishing their own citizens and murdering people. But we've done this, the back of a better term, a whitewash of that in this idea. Oh, they're revolutionaries and whatever. Like, there's a lot going on there. So they've done this series on that. And it's frustrating because you're like, there are people who are have put their life on the line, life and duty, whatever, selflessly, whatever, have done great things. They're not going to get that because people fall for the stupid, you know, post-historical rewriting of that history to a thing. And so, again, and not to blame Apple for Ed Dwight not getting a chance to go into space sooner. Let me make that clear.
This is Andrew's Wish Corner, a feature of the Weird Things.
Well,
podcast.
Again, because I've been livid because this week long dealing with the stupid sort of voice thing. And I'm like, wow, here's, you know, like every other company doing something stupid right now should be thanking Sam Altman because, you know, here Apple pushes through like literally. This guy was horrible. And I'm like, you know, and anyhow, I am very good. Yay, Blue Origin. Thank you for doing this and getting the chance to try to help make right a wrong that was done a long time ago.
I'm going to guess it's been a minute since you've really poked in on the inside doings of Blue Origin, but it still seems like they're comfortable perfecting their suborbital single stage game.
Well, they remember they've been developing the engines for the Vulcan rocket, right? So they're trying to launch their, you know, the next, they're basically providing the engines for, I think it's for ULA. And so they've been basically on that route trying to pursue the BE-4 engines, which have gone to the ULA Vulcan certification too. So that's been the progress. So that's the new, you know, the bigger thing. They have their own big, huge rocket they're building, Armstrong. The challenge is this, and I think the engineers and people at Blue Origin are great, and I think they're doing the best work within the situation they can, but it's a very different organization like SpaceX. When you, I would say that a lot of Blue Origin is just industry people who made the industry the way it was and are trying to recreate that at Blue Origin, have been doing that. And that's why we're at a point now where they still haven't gone orbital. You know, they have still, you know, they're still doing, you know, like you said, the roller coaster flights, the engines, you know, don't think the engine BE-4s have ever even, you know, I did sort of just lose sight of keeping track of that. So,
I guess we'll see. How soon are we? We know the Artemis project is intending to go back to the moon under the per our ill-informed perspectives, the terrifyingly dangerous spare parts government mobile that runs on hydrogen, which is notoriously difficult to keep inside.
Let me clarify. The BE-4 did fly in January 2024 on the Vulcan, so that did happen. That was there. So I just want to give them proper due.
Okay,
so.
But do we think that the government's going to make it to the moon, or do we think a SpaceX commissioned flight will get there first?
I don't know. So part of the problem is the current plan was to use Artemis was to use the SLS basically to justify building the SLS to take the crew to lunar orbit, then use a lander, in this case the SpaceX one, the one that to land them from their orbit to the moon. Elon, understanding who's paying those bills, has been very quiet, remarkably restrained for him, in pointing out it's the most inefficient way to do it, because you're better off if the Starship is even using a Falcon 9, heavy would be a better thing than trying to use what NASA's plan is. But NASA, because because of the Senate and everything else, has to justify the expenditure on the SLS, which is probably like a $20 billion more dollars right now.
Real quick, for anybody who hasn't been paying attention to this one, because it's been a multi-year saga, basically all of Congress has to agree on a thing, but the easiest way to make all of Congress agree on a thing is if everybody gets to go home to their home state and say, I got us this part of it, which, spoiler alert, 50 states all have it, a piece of the action on a thing, maybe not the most efficient way to do things.
And if you get a couple key states, Florida, Alabama, and Texas, and who tends to sit on the commissions for that. So it is I get frustrated with NASA at times, but also NASA is limited by what Congress tells them they have to spend money on. And so it can be easy, and I'm guilty of sometimes picking them too much, and NASA has to play a political game. But and NASA gets as the largest, but people go, we should spend more. I'm like, do you think maybe we should spend what Europe spends on space? And people go, wait, is that a trick question? Yes, it is. They don't spend anything.
Do you know how much they spend on space?
We spend more than everybody else combined. and the question is people, we have been conditioned not to ask, are we spending inefficiently? And the answer is no, 100% no, absolutely not. So will they get there? It's a great question. So the challenge is this. Will Artemis be ready? Will these things be ready? It's not the same. There's Orion, which I think is the craft that's going to carry them. Meanwhile, look at Starliner. You follow the whole plight of Boeing Starliner?
I know they used it to at least disperse a couple of satellites recently. No.
It's not SpaceX. Starliner is the Boeing capsule. There was the SpaceX Dragon.
Right.
And then there were two companies won awards to carry astronauts into space. Boeing and SpaceX. Boeing got like $4 billion and SpaceX got like $2 billion. And there was the, who's going to be first to put astronauts into space? Well, Boeing is yet to put a human being into space on the Starliner. They were supposed to launch a couple weeks ago, by the way. And
maybe that's where I read this. Yeah.
Yeah. Hours before, scrubbed valve problem. So now they're trying to decide, can they fix this on the ground in the next 2 weeks? And there's other people saying that there's a lot more problems though. So SpaceX has been going back and forth and whatever. And there was a time when people were like, no, Boeing's going to get there first. And SpaceX has been flying astronauts on like 4 years now to the space station. So I don't know, Brian.
Keep in mind, it is kind of a weird thing. Like, there's one impulse where you and I both like to be right. And in that regard, we like, because we've been early boosters, so to speak, of SpaceX. However, we also know that we want humanity to win. And the way humanity wins is if there's a lot of very high qualified players in the market and they're all competing with each other.
I'm rooting, in AI, I'm rooting for OpenAI, but I don't want Google to give up, and I don't want Meta to stop coming up with cool open source models. I benefit from this. And the same with the way I feel about space. And I don't, because once somebody becomes, Boeing was in the lead for so long, they got this middle management creep that just kind of took over. And then Boeing became an inept company with great engineers, but just horrible management. And we're seeing this where they're losing out in space. They're losing out in, big contracts for selling airplanes and stuff. And that can happen to any company. I would say that as somebody who's, a big Tesla fan, and I look at, I look at the reviews for the Cybertruck and whatnot, and I look what's going on there. And I'm like, man, I wish your CEO was around to fix things. So.
Yeah.
I think what will have to happen is Jim Bridenstine, who was the former head of NASA, I think he was great. He was pragmatic. He was a big champion for commercial Nelson, who's now in charge, was very anti-commercial, but then I think you realize the only way he's going to actually get anything done on his watch is by using commercial space to become pro that. You're going to need to have probably a president come in and make it a priority and to say, hey, I take this seriously. I'm going to put in a powerful administrator. I'm going to get Congress and everybody together, and we're going to do what it needs to be done. It's just not going to happen by itself. It's just not going to.
Do you feel like there's much heat behind the chatter that we've seen in the press about, China basically positioning, an ability to take out many of our satellites, and we need to have a defensive way to prevent that from happening, what have you?
So we've been doing on the, we have the Space Force now, and then on the military front, an interesting thing happened, which is SpaceX qualified and it now is a launch vehicle for the X-30, I think it is. Remember the X-30? Let me get the
right there. That was the one that was like a miniature space shuttle attached to the top of a bunch of solid rocket boosters, right? Or was that the X-33 or?
Nope. It's the X space plane. X-37, sorry, I'm getting my X's wrong. The X-37 is basically called an orbital test vehicle, and they use that to put military payloads into space. So yeah, think of it as it can go inside of a housing, so they can put this on top of now a Falcon 9, as well as, the other that was using other rockets to launch there. So the Falcon 9 can launch this. It goes in the housing, goes up, and then it leaves the Falcon 9, carries whatever payloads it needs to do, which can be other satellites. It can fly up to stuff. I listened to a well-placed person, running the agency type person, explain to me that where I was asking about capabilities. He said, well, if I had your cell phone right here and I could put whatever I wanted next to your cell phone, I could probably get a pretty good idea of everything on your cell phone. Says, if you think about what this thing can do, think about that. So there's been a big launch. There's been in the military side of stuff, we've been developing a lot of stuff. The X-37 has been doing tons of missions. Now it can be launched on a SpaceX Falcon 9. If Starship, the Starship takes off, and look, SpaceX knows, part of the reason SpaceX is such a highly valuable company right now is that from the military contracts alone, the Starship is going to be an extremely viable system, because all of a sudden, the Air Force, Space Force, military is going to want to have a rapid launch vehicle, because that's part of a contingency. We've had instances where, Chinese Russian craft has broken up, and there's been cases where it could have taken out satellites and stuff. We talk about what happens if you get an incident where you take out a bunch of low Earth orbit satellites. You need to be able to put things up there again. So there's a bright future there, and that will, of course, drive the innovation.
Math. All right. Anything beyond this, I guess we're moving beyond the news of the week and just making stuff up. You got any picks?
Yeah, well, I actually got, let me just see if there's any stories that I saved that I really wanted to get in. Another AI thing, turns out that, LLMs are really good at analyzing, GPT-4 is really good at analyzing financial statements and making good recommendations for investing. Ooh. Of course, I should point out that it's been observed before that a chimpanzee with darts is better than your average mutual fund.
True.
ISIS has been using AI news anchors, by the way. I don't know if you know this, that ISIS has been using AI to create virtual anchors. And then, but they, very, very fundamentalist Islam prevents you from doing likenesses of people, so they blur the faces. So it's good. I think that's good. I think we're good there. We can talk about next week about the Orca sinking, whales sunk a 49-foot yacht in the Moroccan waters.
On the flip side also, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, I read an article about what was alleged to be the first conversation with a whale. Basically, they played some whale song that they were pretty sure meant, hey, come over here. And then Orca came over there and, so... Whatever. Congratulations. Humans have achieved animal mimicry by playing recordings of what may be communications.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know enough to know. I saw that and I'm like, oh, it could have been the equivalent of like, you know, shaving a haircut. I don't know, say this. And they're like, all right.
Yeah.
The little the land monkeys are excited, you know. Like,
hello. 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 Yeah. Although I do like the idea of even if let's say whales aren't as smart as we romantically would like to believe them to be, artistically, romantically, not carnally. Even if that's not the case, I do think there's value in considering how you would establish a handshake protocol, but with an alien intelligence, because. Like, you know, sooner or later, we may actually bump into on some faraway star system somebody that we need to have that handshake protocol with.
So let's talk about that for a second, because it brings up a very interesting thought. And the challenge in talking to whales is language could be a very different thing to us, right? Self could be a very different thing to us. And when you're speaking, trying to communicate with what may be, and remember, intelligence has many different dimensions to it. And so we have of animals, we have a very high social intelligence and we have a very high ability to do abstraction. And so with our ability to abstract, we can think about the future, whatever. One of the reasons that Homo sapiens may have survived as opposed to Neanderthals and other hominids that looked strikingly like us and had almost identical brains was our ability to meet strangers and not want to murder them, because we could hypothesize a scenario where it's cooperative and stuff. And you might have creatures like whales that may have very low tool usage, maybe they've never had to adapt or really create tools and stuff. Although we see dolphins will love to play with things underwater. They might have an extremely high level of abstraction because they live in pods and whatnot. So that's the thing, is we might find that, you know, it's they're horrible at math, but amazing at poetry, you know, that they have these different capabilities. But when we talk about meeting other aliens, they're going to have to be able to manipulate their environment in some way. And when you went to Indonesia, right, Brian?
Yeah.
Okay. What did downtown look like to you?
It looked very Western and modern. Downtown did.
Yeah. Okay. And that is common when you go around the world and you go to like seaports or things like this. You could go around, you know, we still don't quite know who the sea peoples were, you know, during like, you know, the ancient times who spread part of our alphabet, whatever. And it may have been, they were just people living in ports and whatever and communicated. We find that cultures that engage in trade, you know, basically engage in trade and have a high volume of trade, tend to look very similar. But it's not because they're adopting one culture. It's they're adopting the best ideas for what to do. And that means that you get this sort of plurality that you can go to a city, a big city across the world, and unless there's some totalitarian pressure or whatever to make them conform, they tend to look alike. So that might be the case, that if we encounter aliens and stuff, we might find we have way more in common with them than we would think, because it's always brought up to me about Star Trek, because they'd go before they like, be careful, because if you use the letter L, they're going to murder you, because, you know, it's like, so because they're stupid and they don't understand their different cultures. And it's like, well, you know, and so
in defense of Star Trek, usually they were the ones usually the ones creeping up and like showing up like, ha ha, we're on your planet. Like if we were to encounter an alien species, most likely we would. It would probably be at a neutral territory, and we would know that we're fellow explorers, and there are certain things we could intuit. Similar to like, you know, the Phoenicians, you know, they went everywhere, and they were like, man, they'd be talking like this over here, they'd be talking like that over here. Why don't we just write up a code that kind of translates the sounds they make out of their weird mouths?
Yeah, let's use, you know, instead of symbols, let's use phonetics.
Yeah.
Phonetics. Wait a second, Brian. what?
Yeah, that's right. I rode that ride at Disney.
Yeah. So I think the first communication should be electronic. And I did my rant about, like, I love that people have three-body problem. I had fun with the TV show, although it seemed very low budget. But the idea, the premise, the dark forest hypothesis, we talk about the dark forest hypothesis, is it like we haven't heard from everybody because everybody's hiding because they're afraid for anybody to find out what there are. And it's like, that just makes no sense whatsoever. We can count the number of people in the Singhalese, uncontacted tribes, tell you what their body temperature is and everything about them. If they think that they're hiding, they're fooling themselves. We're just like, yeah, you guys do you. We don't want the complications of this. You may have ate the last person we sent there. Hands off.
Well, and on top of that, like there's still, I think there's one island in Hawaii where their number one problem is that they want to preserve their culture, but sooner or later, those children become 14 and they encounter a cell phone. And it's very difficult to keep them on that island once they discover a cell phone.
Well, and that brings up a great philosophical question. One that I've argued is that we've talked about this before. Is it moral for us to not offer? Because those people living on the Andaman Islands, like they are facing sexual abuse. We know this, incest, all these other things that we consider now to be, you know, a denial of one's own agency over their own body. And if we say that it's okay for them and not okay for somebody else, then we're kind of denying their humanity. And it gets in, and I'm not saying there's easy answers, but it gets in that sticky kind of questions like in Hawaii, and it's like, oh, what if we don't tell the kids that there's another place? Well, that just sounds horrible.
It also sounds like the opening to another hour of discussion.
I gotta bring up one more, Brian.
All right, go for it.
So in our search for extraterrestrials, there's currently some researchers have now tried to figure out what would it look like if you could spot a Dyson sphere.
I would imagine since I read the documentary Pandora's Star, I would imagine it's like there's just a star and then it's gone.
But there's a point of which in construction, it would be apparent because you get a variability of that, right? And it depends, like that depends on the nature of the Dyson star sphere. And I think that we are stuck in kind of our 19th century way of looking at things.
I do feel it has been a couple of years since we've reminded people. The idea is a Dyson sphere is basically let the sun run its engine, just build, you know, solar panels that capture all of the energy in a total sphere around it. And congrats, you have a star's worth of energy that you can use to do projects that are beyond the ken of mere mortals like us.
So they've built a profile to say that we think a Dyson sphere would look like this. It would be a mid-infrared emitter with no clear contaminants or signatures. And so they have an idea of like a Dyson sphere could look like this. And they found something like 53 candidates of the could be Dyson spheres. And the scientists say, we're sure it's a natural. We're pretty sure it's a natural cause. But as our best description of what you would look like, it would look like this.
Wait a minute. So maybe let's say you were an advanced civilization and you were afraid of being invaded by an even more advanced civilization. Then you might want to construct a Dyson sphere in such a way that it captures all of the energy, but lets out, let's say this is reductionist, but the visible spectrum of light to humans or some chunk of the spectrum. Like maybe it doesn't show up on, like it's a star, but maybe there's no X-rays that come from it. Maybe there's no gamma rays. Maybe there's no whatever's.
What's the goal?
The goal is to not hide the fact that you're an advanced civilization, but camouflage it just a little bit so you're not so obvious as to get caught switching the light out like the beginning of Pandora's Star.
Interesting. A way to sort of subtly, you know, fade into the bushes.
Exactly. like Homer.
Entirely possible. And so I think that I think that this probably would have been a bit more ridiculed 20 years ago. And I liked it. I think the astronomy's, since we've been finding tons of planets and since the question comes up where it's not like, hey, are there aliens, was a crazy thing to be like, it's more like, hey, where are the aliens? I encourage this sort of thing. And you read this and they're like, yeah, it's probably natural, but we thought it'd be fun to try to develop a protocol to look at it. And that's healthy to me. That's a very, very healthy way to do it. We should encourage more of that kind of speculative science where people are out there just asking big questions saying we could do this. And, you know, But again, we could do another episode of like, yeah, what happens when we get the signal? Like, what happens?
You know what? I know for sure I'll be dead by then. Or maybe not. That was one thing I really enjoyed in, I forget which book I was reading recently, they say we don't know when the first person who will live to 150 years old is, but we do know that the one, or when that person will be born, but we do know that the one who will live to 1,000 will probably be born about 20 years later. It's like once humanity solves for a problem, we tend to be pretty good at solving very quickly forward from it.
Yeah. We could very much be in a very rapid point of advancement and not realize it, but for another show.
Yeah.
Brian, picks?
Yeah, you know what? Normally I get worried when a book is selling really well, because I assume it's about to be a reductionist kind of like pop science something or other. But I ended up starting to read, let me see if I can find it, Hidden Potential by Adam Grant. Adam Grant previously, I think, did, I want to say it was The Power of Habit or something. Oh, by the way, take a look at this. As I just looked for the book, I got, I'm certain that you could speak to this phenomenon of like people hear about a book. So I typed in Hidden Potential, Adam Grant. And the first thing is the book. After that is nothing but AI generated garbage books that are hoping that you'll mistake it as you search for the words Hidden Potential. But no, this one is actual Hidden Potential by Adam Grant. A lot of stuff we've heard before, but I like the audiobook. It's got new metaphors for the same ideas.
Cool. I decided to rewatch Severance. Did you ever watch Severance?
Oh yeah. Loved it. And I believe I didn't watch the whole thing and then watch it all again, but because it was a Cord Killers watch, it meant that I had to watch an episode and then go back and watch with my family the same episode. So I think I've seen them all twice.
Yeah. I don't rewatch stuff very often, but I kind of get older and kind of run out of things to watch. I kind of go back to stuff. And I think I'm like three episodes in, and man, it is great. It holds up. It really, really holds up. For those of you who don't know, I'm going to tell you the premise because it's explained very much quickly in the very beginning. And that is, there's a procedure by which they can plant a chip in your brain, which can create an entirely different you. So there's a company that does this, and people show up to go work in this office, and their entire life is inside of that office. And then when they go into the elevator at the end of the day, the switch switches back, and maybe go back to their normal self with no idea what happened there. And like great hard science fiction, it takes one idea that is currently impossible or improbable and says, what are the consequences of this? And they go, who would want to use this? Why would they want to use this? What's going on? And what's neat is you can keep that premise going forever. Because it's not like there is a mystery of, you know, who's doing this behind it. But the real question is, if this is true, what else is true? And you can keep asking that of that. And I love that. It was produced by Ben Stiller, who directed a number of the episodes. I forget the name of the showrunners, of course, which I'm guilty of. But very beautifully done, very extremely well acted, very engaging premise. They keep building these mysteries and pulling you in. So Severance is my pick.
Yes, I will second your play on that. It's very, very good. And unfortunately, the only way for me to tell you the particular aspects that I think are very good will rob you of some of the experience of watching it. So just go watch Severance.
Yeah. Yeah, solid. It's good. And they're doing, I think the next season is going to come out next year.
Yeah, they got a little bit hamstrung on account of the strikes and all that stuff.
Yeah. But what a great casting. There's some people that were really new or kind of I'd never seen before, who are, guy who plays Milchek, amazing.
Yeah. Oh my God. Just a surreal, robotic, terrifying grin.
And who, yeah, switches from charming to, yeah.
So. And meanwhile, also, I forget the name of the character, but the dude who looks like, as we later see, I'm going to take something away. The guy who was also in Fallout is great.
Yeah. All good. Check it out. So, Brian, it's been weird.
Yep.